Hi, my name's Hawk. I'm here in the bush. That's right, the forest. I'm out here trying to find a mind sword. So, follow me on these travels, folks, and we might just find one, yeah? That's right, just using my horse to try and find the mind sword. Oh, look, there's an old man.
I have that which you seek, the sword of eyes, the sword of the mind, the sword of power, the sword of...
That's all right. Is it the mind sword?
It is a sword of thoughts, a sword of dreams, a sword of your own fantasy.
But you said it was a mind sword. Like, it's going to make me smarter? Does that mean I'm going to do better at chess and crosswords?
It benefits those that are trustworthy, honest, have honor, and of course, will take the lead. And of course, be there for all those less fortunate of those.
Well, that's great. Well, I got 20 bucks. Would that do it?
All right. Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, get out of mine, there you go.
And welcome, folks, to episode number 146 of the Hawk the Slayer special on Lethal Mullet Podcast. This is one that quite a few of our UK pals over there have been asking about. You know, they've been going, hey, mate, what are you going to do this great episode on Hawk the Slayer, yeah? And guess what I said? G'day, mate, how you going? I'm the mullet, and I'm going to cover it when I watch it. And I did. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet, and tonight, yes, we are going to be looking at Hawk the Slayer. It's a film I've never really seen before, folks. Heard about it. I always got it mixed up with some other amazing fantasy stuff of the time. Kroll, I get it mixed up with a number of times, and Legend, and, you know, all these other great films, which are great in their own right. Kroll, of course, what I'm a huge fan of. But Hawk the Slayer turned out to be something that, you know, it may slip past, but I'm really a big fan of now. And I've got the Blu-ray, and it is glorious. It has a lot of special features. It's got some great insight into the film itself. Great to see Jack Palance is the bad guy of this one, the villain. There's some great stars. And, of course, without, you know, getting too far into it just yet, it's got some great trinkets, one being the sword, the Minder Sword. That's right. And I'm a huge fan of what they put together here. So we are going to get into that tonight. We're going to also look at, you know, what some of our friends have always told me about this show is that, this film, is that it should have made a trilogy. And that's, I think, the original intention was to make a trilogy out of this material. And it's certainly a lot of fun, folks. That's all here tonight on the one, the only, Lethal Mullet Podcast.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Hi, this is Tom Caldwell from Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, inviting you to check out our show. Once a month, we release an episode about the films of the great master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. You can find us on Facebook at Hitchcock Good Evening, on Twitter at Good Evening Pod, and along with myself and Brandon Shane Mutala and Chris Haig, we bring you a fun and friendly show that you can enjoy alongside your viewing of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. On behalf of the program, I wish you good evening.
Hey, how's your man?
Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
All right, folks, welcome to the dojo. Here we're going to have a quick chat about what's been happening in the world of martial arts for me. And also we're going to have a chat about the addition to my weapons collection, which has certainly changed things. So first up, what I've been doing is obviously getting back heavily into my Jikar training, which is predominantly Goju-Ryu with some Shotokan trappings, and really getting back into the base techniques and really finessing as I go up the ladder in that style. So that's the base core thing I'm doing with martial arts right now, and really just it being a traditional style of karate, which I've always wanted to do. I did one very, very early on in my youth, in my teens, and that was strictly a Shotokan style, no Goju-Ryu influence at all. And as I sort of moved away from that into different styles, I was doing freestyle karate and Japanese karate as well on top. So going from, you know, style, which is, you know, an Australian version of Shotokan in the 80s, and sort of coming full circle to now doing both Shotokan and Goju-Ryu together under the one umbrella is amazing, particularly with learning all the different kata and stuff like that. But the key thing that I wanted to add to that always was learning new techniques and new weapons and stuff like that on the side. You know, my attention to those sorts of things has always been wanting to learn more, and certainly different things, not just the ones that I've learnt, or even just weapons in furthering in the same systems I've learnt before. So when I had a chance to buy a cold steel gladius, as in the gladius that's used by the Roman legion many eons ago, I snapped it up. And this is a weapon which, you know, I certainly don't have a real feel with already yet. So it's definitely something new, something that I'm going to have to warm to. It's weighted differently than the katana or the straight sword, the Chinese straight sword, because I'm used to those two weapons from the different forms and training that I've done in the last 20 years or so in both, you know, systems. So it's interesting to try something completely different, which doesn't really have a manual to tell you how. So I'm using my own wit and obviously my own background from the different systems, and the fact that the human body can only work so many ways with a sword, and particularly is designed to be cut and slashed and used in a certain way in those flanks and stuff like that the centurions did. It's an interesting weapon. I certainly will be putting up some videos and some photos on the socials on that one when I get a little bit more mastery with it. But it is an interesting weapon. The gladius is, you know, it seems short when you see it, you know, in film and TV and stuff like that. But when you're actually using it, it's quite a bit longer than I expected. And it's weighted at the end quite well. So when you're using a right or a left slash from high, it, you know, it does all the work. Your arm doesn't have to do much. So stay tuned, folks, as I try something completely different and master the Roman gladius.
And I've been working long, long, long days ahead, working in front of a VHS.
And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
All right, it's got some news. Very short little brief segment here, folks. News is I have been given an amazing, small, but I could say one that it's a package, folks. It's hard to get the words out because this meant a lot to me. I had an actor by the name of Jeff Wincott, which you know all very, very well, send me a little bit of amazing stuff the other day. And this is, of course, you know, something that is near and dear to my heart, as well as I'm sure it is his because it's his new project. But I love the fact that not only is he coming back out to do lead roles in films, this is his first lead role in 20 years, folks. That's right. Jeff Wincott is back in a film called The Issue with Elvis, which he's co-produced along with his wife and stars in. And this is really, I think, great to see, first of all, that he's back out in such a, you know, a lead role, but also a chance to see him do some amazing dramatic work. As he's always been a fantastic actor, obviously, I followed his work for his martial arts and action film. But even back then, he was always somebody that was a great actor, really inhabited roles. And you could tell he was putting more than 100% effort in each time. It was 150 each time. So hats off to him. But I got a couple of signed cards sent out to us here for a little bit of the, you know, help sharing and obviously promoting this amazing film that he's put together. And it's streaming very soon in March out here in Australia. So if you get a chance, folks, go and check out The Issue with Elvis, starring the one and only amazing martial artist and Canadian actor, Jeff Wincott.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah, man, it's been real busy, D, you know. Oh, wow.
Right, yeah.
Just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage and enjoy the show about, you know, films and all that sort of stuff. You know?
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
Welcome to the Enchanted Hotel, folks. Yes, the one that shows plenty of fantasy films and more. One of those being, of course, the one, the only 1980 classic, Sword and Sorcery Adventure. It's about two warring brothers, one who killed one's father, and of course the other by the name of Hawk, who wants to basically be noble, chill around the place, jump on a horse, use a mind sword, and have four other friends try and save the lands and, of course, avenge the death of his father. That's against Voltan, his older brother. Voltan, sounding something a hell of a lot like a character from Flash Gordon, which came out also in 1980, folks, by the way, which is interesting. This is a film which came out the 21st of December 1980. It's a British sword and sorcery fantasy film. It's got a little bit of a spaghetti western flavour to it as well. Director was Terry Marcel, music by Harry Robertson. It is a great film. It was brought by Chips Productions and Marcel Robertson Productions Limited. As I mentioned earlier, this is a film I largely knew a little bit about, but not a lot. This came up in conversations when I was chatting to friends about Krull, which I always have been of the thought is the best fantasy film produced in Britain ever. You know, there's always been, you know, fantasy films like Excalibur, and of course this one has been touted as one as well, one of the best fantasy films ever made. And it's quite one that a lot of my friends, particularly from the UK, have often said, you haven't seen a fantasy film until you've seen Hawk the Slayer. So before we get right head on into our chat, here's a little bit of a blurb about what this film's all about. Hawk the Slayer opens up as Voltan, one of the brothers of a king, infiltrates his father's castle, and he wants to gain the ancient power, but he's denied by his father. As he's denied, he then mortally wounds his own father. And of course, his father refuses to give over the power of what is the Elven Mind Stone, and the last of the Elven Mind Stones that they have. As he departs, the old man is faced with, of course, another son, Hawk, who enters, and from here, he is given the great sword with a pommel shaped like a human hand. And of course, with this, it is then given the Mind Stone. Now, this, of course, it becomes what we call the Mind Sword. From here, Hawk basically vows to avenge his father and take out Voltan altogether. Voltan is pretty much the big bad in this, and Voltan is played by Jack Palance. Yes, Jack Palance of all those great films that you know him from. Just like Batman, he goes, "Say this, son of a bitch! Get access chemicals." Same guy. But in this, he plays a one-eyed, one-unmarked bad guy, badly scarred in battle, who wears his helmet, and Voltan's his character. Classic Jack Palance, of course, and gives it grit and, you know, enough theatrics that it plays out well. From here, Voltan basically wreaks havoc across the entire country. And then much later, Renulf, who's a warrior, is struggling away from Voltan's army and forces. And from here, he arrives at a place that's basically a convent. From here, inside the convent, he tells that he survived Voltan's attack on the village and the attack on the people. And of course, from here, he knows that there's, you know, absolute brutal carnage of women and children and much, much more. And Renulf is pretty seriously injured. But from here, he's brought back into good health through, obviously, medicinal and, of course, first aid through the nuns. But he lost his own hand in the process. Great character, by the way. This is one of the, again, great character actor playing this role, which we'll get into a little bit later when we talk about the cast. From here, Voltan basically calls out to a wizard to keep the pain from going to his wounded face. As you see in this, he wears basically this classic medieval helmet, but part of it covers his face, so you know there's something that's happened in battle. The wizard does a spell of some kind and says, "Your face will not pain you for a while, but there's one who stands between us and the final victory. You will prepare the way to his death." And of course, you know, this is all classic, you know, Arthurian style legend, which is, you know, using the classic myth structures and stuff like that in here too, which is something I guess they all set out to do when writing this. Voltan then appears at the convent and from here interrupts, obviously, the nuns having, you know, the mass and stuff like that, and takes the abbess. And from here, takes also the right of them to basically claim he wants a massive amount of gold as ransom for her return. And of course, Voltan and his henchmen leave with the abbess, and the nuns tell Renulf to find the High Abbot at the Fortress of Danesford. So, of course, Renulf is the one we're following at this point in the story. And he goes to the Fortress of Danesford and tells the abbot And the what happened? And the abbot tells him he has to find Hawk, a warrior that goes around the place. Hawk, who is described in the kind of style that the Clint Eastwood character from the Spaghetti Westerns is. A warrior who, you know, prowls through the West Badlands and stuff like that. The abbot gives Randolph a token to give to Hawk, and this is basically to basically let Hawk know what's happening, I guess, and how legit things are. Hawk then is going through the land, finds Randolph, and who'd been captured by some pirate-like characters. Hawk then basically rescues Randolph, and of course, Randolph then says, look, I've got a quest for you. Classic quest structure here, folks. If you're a fan of, you know, sword and sandal, particularly sword and sorcery and stuff like that, this is where things really kick up. And they've also got a kind of a samurai twist in this, which is a little bit like a Seven Samurai idea, which I really liked. From here, Hawk locates his old pals, Gort, a giant who wields a warhammer. Great character, by the way. Crow, who's an elf who uses a bow. Bolden, who's a dwarf, skilled with the use of whips. So you see how they've all got their own little weaponry? So five warriors, not seven like the Seven Samurai. and, of course, going up against Voltan's group, you know, it's not quite enough to take on, you know, the large numbers that he's got. And from this, Voltan still demands that the ransom be paid. But Hawk steals gold from a slave trader in this to pay that ransom. Now, it's interesting. We got two brothers fighting each other, you know, and it's classic, you know, father and son's story that way. Hawk completely doubts that Voltan will let go of the abyss after the ransom is paid. He's that kind of person from that he knows. Considering that Voltan actually murdered Hawk's wife, Iliane. And Hawk and his team, basically from here, attack Voltan's camp to rescue the Avis, but they fail. They don't make it, which is really, it's a great scenes and some great sword work too, by the way, in that scenes. But again, they aren't successful in doing what they need to do. And from here, Hawk kills Voltan's son, Drogo. And I think that's the tipping point for, particularly for Voltan, who knows, you know, he's killed, basically, Hawk's killed his nephew. You know, it's pretty sad. From here, Voltan confronts the heroes in a final battle at the convent and with the aid of Turncloak nuns, captures the entire team. A sorceress, the friend of Hawk, helps the heroes escape, but Bolden is killed. From here, they attack, the heroes now attack the convent for the last time, and Hawk gets his final revenge on Voltan. But here, you know, it's not without obviously some sacrifices. Crow's badly wounded. Renulf dies. And Hawk battles his way across to Voltan, taking Voltan's men each relentlessly. From there, we basically get to see Hawk ask them to set them free in exchange for Hawk to be Voltan's prisoner. Voltan agrees, but Hawk then manages to take Gort free, and the two fight Voltan for his remaining men to kill them all. Great story, and it really is one that's taken me a lot of time to get to actually finally see. And you know, if I had a chance to go back and you know, see this earlier, I would. And particularly with some of my friends that have come out from the UK and lived here in Australia now for many years, they always said, "Ah, Kroll's okay, but Hawk the Slayer, bro." Hawk the Slayer, which we'll get into. I got into another episode many, many eons ago. I think it was like episode 61 or 62 with Kyle Wagner. Great one with that one too. So let's have a look at the cast. Playing Hawk is John Terry. So John Terry, born in 1950 in the States, is an American actor. Best known for Christian Shepherd in Lost. Played Larry McCoy in Las Vegas. He's also the father of football player Hannah Terry of the KIF Örebro DFF in the Swedish Women's Football League. Interesting. He's born in Vero Beach, Florida.
He was also educated at Loomis Chaffee Prep School in Windsor, Connecticut. And from there, basically, had a career building original custom log homes in North Carolina. I played roles in local theatre, moving to Alaska of all places, and at the age of 30, moved to New York and became a full-time actor. So let's have a look at some of his careers. Obviously, Hawk the Slayer was his debut. He was also in Wild Geese 2, Tuxedo Warrior, and There Goes the Bride around the same time. He was also in Full Metal Jacket, playing Lieutenant Lockhart, which is quite a good one, actually. Again, I've always liked Full Metal Jacket. Felix Leiter, he played in The Living Daylights. Yes, he's part of the 007 franchise, folks. He also played roles in Against the Grain, Of Mice and Men, The Resurrected, and of course, they did an adaptation of The Case of Charles Dexter Ward, which is a H.P. Lovecraft one too. So he's done quite a bit of work, and he's quite good in the series that I've seen him in over the years. You know, he's you know, definitely on good form in this too. So other roles that he probably will be known for, we've got Zodiac he was in. We've also got A Dangerous Woman back in 93, In Country in 1989, and I think the other big one would be Surfer Dude playing Mercer Martin back in 2008. He's been in CSI in New York, The Fortune Theory, and Nine Dead more recently as well. In this, he plays Hawk the Slayer, and again, there's kind of a Clint Eastwood feel to it to a certain extent, but it's classic. Hero and Arthurian hero, that's for sure. So we have Jack Palance playing Voltan, Hawk's evil brother, and he really does quite well in this. He was about the age of 60 when he did this role, and he was really good. And always Jack Palance plays Jack Palance, pretty much. You know what you're getting, and this one, certainly one I didn't expect him in. I was never told that he was in this, so it's quite interesting. As Gort the Giant, we have Bernard Breslau. And of course, I know Bernard. And of course, we know Bernard well from Kroll. That's right. He's 6 foot seven. He basically had a career from about 54 through to 1993. And he's definitely somebody that you know is going to be in, you know, the role of something like this in a fantasy film. But also, what's great about him, he was a comic actor as well. He was in, of course, part of the Carry On film franchise, which is great. He was born in Stepney, London, and he's certainly known more, I think, for Kroll than this movie as well. Ray Charlson as Crow, and he's the elf character in this. We also have Peter O'Farrell as Bolden, a dwarf in this. Now, the one that I didn't realise was, first of all, born in England, which is a surprise to me because he does an absolutely remarkable and bang-on American accent. Of course, is W. Morgan Shepherd, born in 1932 and sadly passed away in 2019. I knew him more for American films and TV and everything from The Prestige into Gettysburg as well, where he has that great scene after being down on the hills and the low point. He goes, "I told him we're going to take that damn hill," he says to Martin Sheen as one of the generals trying to get his men up that damn hill. Of course, he's also has a son that's in franchises as well. That is, of course, Mark Shepherd. And you know him from Firefly, where he plays Badger. And, of course, he's in Battlestar Galactica and a number of other shows. Very famous in his own right. But Morgan Shepherd's been in so much stuff. Star Trek, particularly. Babylon 5. He was in Max Headroom back in the 80s, which is great. He was the Soul Hunter in Babylon 5, which is a fantastic one as well. He was in Gargoyles. He was also in, what else? A lot of different original films as well. I think the one that's surprising is the amount of times he's turned up in Star Trek. So he was in Star Trek The Next Generation's The Schizoid Man and Voyager's Bliss. But if you watch Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, his role was that of the warden of the Klingon Gulag, where we get to see Shatner find his way out and fight himself, yes. of course, he was in the films Gods and Generals and Gettysburg as well, which is just fantastic. Fantastic actor, and it's sad that he passed a few years ago too. Patricia Quinn as the sorceress, or as woman, a sorceress, I should say. Very good in this, actually. Very, very good. Cheryl Campbell plays Sister Monica. Annette Crosby plays the Abbess. Katrina McColl plays Eliane. Shane Brandt plays Drogo. Harry Andrews plays the High Abbot. Christopher Benjamin plays Fitzwalter. Roy Kinnear is the innkeeper. Patrick McGee is the priest. Ferdy Main as Old Man, and that's Hawk and Voltan's father. Graham Stark as Sparrow. Warren Clark as Scar, and of course Derek O'Connor as Ralph. It's a hell of a cast, folks, you know, for back in 1980. Same time, of course, that we had Excalibur pretty much come out too. You know, Britain was always a great place to shoot films and stuff like that, and has such great countryside for it, particularly at the time, you know, as less expansion, I guess, into those bush areas and stuff like that. But some of the locations are really, really interesting, which we're going to get into now. You think about classic fantasy, you know, and these days a lot of it's shot in New Zealand, of course. You know, Lord of the Rings series and even the likes of some of the more fanciful stuff we see, like Spartan-like stuff, you know, Spartacus, that's shot there as well. So that sort of thing's interesting. But this film predominantly shot in and around London and there in UK, obviously. So here's the location. So we've got Mansfield, Nottinghamshire, England, UK. It was one. We actually have a Mansfield out here too. I think there's one down in Sydney as well out here in Australia, which makes it interesting. Black Park Lake, Black Park, Ivor Heath, Buckinghamshire, England, UK. I guess this is getting out into those sort of lake areas and stuff like that, which we see in the film. Black Park, Ivor Heath, Buckinghamshire, England, UK, for some of the bush scenes as well. Now, what's interesting is these areas are not far from the studio that they did. And that is, of course, Pinewood Studios at Ivor Heath, Buckinghamshire, England, UK. So it was in the area, right? And I think that's the big part of, you know, using those areas in and around. Now, talking about some of the props, obviously the mind sword itself is such an interesting concept. We've got so many other franchises that have things. Well, Kroll's got the glaive, you know, Star Wars has lightsabers. But this had mind sword, you know, which is, I think, a very, very interesting sword nonetheless. It's you know, I've seen reproductions of it that fans have done and stuff like that. And it's a two-handed blade. And it has at the one end, obviously, the sword itself, so the hilt and two-arm length that it has. But also at the end, we have this, basically it's a small hand where the stone basically sits in. And if you look around, you can actually see some really, really nice additions of this around. The fans are constructed. Smithies themselves are made as well. And a lot of them are made straight from scratch. And apparently the prop itself was a real well-to-do blade, which is quite interesting. And what I will do is I'll put up some that I find on the Lethal Facebook page so you guys can see them, because I think they're absolutely beautiful. I mean, you could probably 3D print it. You know, really, I mean, it wouldn't be a real blade, obviously, but it would still be a good one to do. But the fact that smithies are actually doing this and doing their double forged steel blade and putting it out there, and of course, has the nice little thing of the Elven Mind Stone at the top. It's just absolutely brilliant. Of course, out of those mind swords, you also got the one used by Voltan as well in this too, the sword that could well have had that as well. What I think is great about it is it's such an interesting and definitely beautiful addition of things that would really add to it. Now, the other thing that's interesting is a sequel's been touted for some time. And, of course, it was going to be called Hawk the Hunter. And I think as late as, like, 2015, they were still talking about doing it. However, folks, we have some good news. And with that, we head to the newsroom. All right, here's the news. And this is a quote coming from Simon Pegg, which I found on Twitter. Thanks to, of course, Greg Robertson, a man in Scotland, of course, the one, the only Kilt from Mullet and Kilt, and, of course, Darth Elvis. Now, he sent me a little tag to a 2000 AD post, which has just come out. Here's the quote from Simon Pegg. It's a testament to the lasting impact of Terry Marcel's 1980 low-budget fantasy adventure that 40 years on, Garth Ennis and Henry Flint have revisited the world of Hawk and the last elven Mindstone to bring us this lovingly crafted sequel, Simon Pegg. And, of course, this is a 5-issue sequel comic book miniseries, and this will be at all local comic book stores, etc. And, of course, coming from, of course, the creative talents of Garth Ennis and Henry Flint, this should be something to really, really check out. And I'm keen as mustard to see what this is going to be like, particularly the fact that, you know, it's a loving, you know, and definitely one that, you know, is a loving film. Everyone really, you know, that grew up around the time always talks about that film, particularly if they're from the UK. It's just one of those films you want to check out because people will always tell you, oh, I love that film as a kid. And if you're growing up around that film, there's that passion to want to check it out again and all that sort of stuff. So I'm a huge fan of it now. It's something I'm going to be re-watching on a bigger screen, and I'm certainly going to be doing it when I get a projector here soon, folks. I'm actually picking one up very, very soon to watch films and stuff like that on, and maybe even watch it outside, like a drive-in. Who knows? Hawk the Slayer, fantastic film. On the Hallenbach scale, it is a whopping 5 out of 5. I'm a convert. I love it. And I got to tell you, folks, you got to check it out. This is great action cinema in the fantasy sword and sorcery setting.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that new movie, I'm the lethal mullet. Wow, I'm the lethal. Wow, I'm the lethal. Oh, I'm the lethal mullet.